Welcome back to the Automate Construction Podcast. We're joined today by Luka Zevnik, and you are a materials expert who bought a concrete printer, and you've been doing a ton of printing yourself. Today, we're going to talk about how you got involved in the concrete world, all kinds of materials, science, and technology. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you, Jared, for having me in your podcast.
Yeah, sure. So let's start with you before you got to concrete printing. Where did you learn so much about materials?
My whole career of a chemical engineer is actually connected with construction chemistry. I did a PhD in chemical engineering on other field, but then as soon as I went to a company to get a job, I started with construction chemistry, and this was around 15, 16, 17 years ago. And yeah, slowly I began with just with the chemistry and with the admixtures, and then slightly also with experiences and with everything, I get into the concrete world. So I know a lot of about chemistry of construction materials, as well as what concrete is as a material, as a construction material with construction characteristics. And yeah, all these together give me some good background what I'm doing now. So 3D printing is very new, and because of that, a lot of material issues are unsolved and unknown.
So when it
And
comes
yeah.
to construction materials, I guess from my perspective, the only thing I think of is concrete, but what other construction materials might you be doing chemical engineering with?
A construction chemistry is a very large area, and it covers not only cement but also other hydraulic binders. So everything which connects with water, so binds with water. And this is not only Portland cements. There are other cements, and there are also non-cements. It could be lime, it could be gypsum, it could be a lot of different stuff. But sure, cement and Portland cement is very known because, I mean, it's the most abundant man-made material on Earth. But the cement is not everything. Nowadays, when you would like to do some crazy stuff, let's say doing concreting in very high temperature or very low temperature, or I mean in a city when you have just few hours close that you could close the roads. So all these aspects are connected with the chemistry of Portland cement. So that means how fast a hydration, that is the reaction with the cementitious materials and the water, goes. So it could go slowly or very fast, and this is sure recognized by analytical chemistry, and also in a construction lab with measuring hardness. But we achieve that characteristics with special chemicals, and these chemicals are called admixtures, and these admixtures could be in liquid or in powder form. So you can use it as liquids in a concrete plant, just adding the materials, adding the liquids to a concrete mixer, or you can formulate the powder binder. So, I mean, there are different ways how to manipulate with the chemistry of Portland cement.
And the main admixtures, you got accelerants, retarders, you have superplasticizers, you also have fibers. I guess I would put in a separate category than those other three
Yes.
things. What is there another category of admixtures besides those four?
Oh, sure. I mean, there are, I don't know, maybe 10 categories, but for sure, most known and most important are the group of plasticizers and superplasticizers. So probably today there is almost probably 80, 90% of all Portland cement which is used in combination with the plasticizer and superplasticizer. And this is due to the extreme efficiency of these chemicals because it can reduce water. So if it can reduce water, it can reduce strength. So maybe you can put less cement than you should in a mix, and so you gain some money, you make some profit out of it. So today super plasticizers are inevitable in construction industry. It's not the only, but it's by far the largest group of admixtures. So
not just
yes.
Money too, the environment as well. Cement is the biggest environmental factor. Yeah, that's critical. I think we're getting I'm super excited about this, especially when you say saving on cement. That's like one of the most important things in my perspective. But I think we're getting super into the scientific details right now. For the more casual listeners' sake, can we jump into the story of how did you first learn about 3D printed construction? And then from there, what did you see? How did you decide which printer to get?
When a customer, one of my previous customers called me and asked me if I can do a consulting on the subject of 3D printing of concrete, I said that I don't know, so I can help with the selection of materials and with the chemistry in the background. But I don't believe in 3D printing. So this was my answer. And actually, this perspective changed a lot in the last 1.5 years. So now I believe in 3D printing a lot because it's excellent combining digital technologies and technologies which are running, with the help of digital technology like robots in the concrete, which is still a very robust and very harsh, rough material. It's not precise material like metals or something like that. And this is a challenge. So how to combine this not so exact material like concrete is and something what is totally precise like a robot manipulation, which can run with extreme precision. Below millimeters, and talking with millimeters with respect in concrete, this is crazy. So you can measure meters, you can measure centimeters, okay, and there it stops. But now we should find a way how to combine these two very different worlds.
If only we could predict slump so accurately.
we are now on a slump, which is really just a basic idea of what consistency of concrete is, and this is helpful. This is helpful to get you an idea if the concrete is pumpable or not, or if you are in a range of concrete workability that ensures you that everything will go smoothly on. I started because I already had a robot arm, and I just bought a concrete pump. It's a continuous mixing pump. And I just simply start with combining a robot arm and the mixer, the continuous mixer, so continuous pumping and mixing machine, and I was able to design my own chemistry, and I started with this simple one component system. It was not that difficult. Because I had experiences as well as in robotics and in materials, I soon faced limitations of materials. So a one component system, so this is a system where you use only concrete and no additional chemicals like accelerators, extra as a second component, you're quite limited in printing, in speed printing, in negative angles, in special shapes of your element and so on. And when I asked some guys around which already developed 3D printers, what's the price of this machine, so I was surprised because it was so high. It was very high.
300,000.
Yeah, 100,000 or more, 200,000, depends on what you would like to do. And I just said, I don't have that money, but I would like to have a concrete printer. So we started to design our own two component set printer. Sure, we used all the components which are already there on the market and just combine everything. And yeah, on that, with that knowledge and with that development, We got a very nice machine for quite low money. I would say, I don't know, for around 70,000 euros.
And with your experience prior, we're missing kind of a critical link in between your construction materials experience and the 3D printing with the robot. You had some other autonomous lights out manufacturing experience between there.
Yeah, it was before. So as I told you, 5 or 8, 7 years ago, I started my own company, and a part of work I was doing was consultancy in a field of chemical construction chemistry and concrete formulation, and also designing or producing some fancy design or architectural elements, pieces out of concrete. And by the time there was one customer which ordered first small amounts of some very tiny coasters, very small elements, nothing special. And actually it turned out that I'm the only one in this area in Slovenia where I live who is capable of producing precise coasters of concrete, so of cementitious materials, and this was the crucial thing. So they would like to have a concrete, not plastic, not paper, not metal, but concrete, because concrete is now popular. And we started producing by hand all these coasters, and then orders increased exponentially. So let's say on 1 month the order was 1,000 pieces, and then next month was few thousand pieces, and then the next half a year later it was already 10,000 and 100,000 and so on and so on. And I decided to do a bit autonomous automation machine which is dealing with concrete, and that's why we bought a robot. And this robot was a servant, so I don't know if this is the right word, so it served, so it not used the, let's say, like in 3D printing, but just have trays and put the trays on some stages. So on one stage we have the filling into the molds, and on the other stage we have demolding the hard coasters, and then polishing and brushing, and everything was automated. And yeah, we learned from that story, and we did a lot of these coasters. We did 1.3 or 1.4 million of these coasters, so a lot, really a lot. Even for the robot, it was really a hard work, because the robot was running 24/7, almost 24/7.
It's really fascinating, because it's kind of the dream scenario for someone who gets into automation, is you get to a situation where you have the robot set up, it's producing something that's in demand to the market automatically without too much, maybe you're loading the material or cleaning some things here and there, but it was able to run at night?
Yes. That's at crazy. Night. Yeah, at night without a presence of operator. So it was really fun that, sure, I mean, there were a lot of times when the robot stopped because of some issues, but it was really fascinating when I came in the morning and see that the robot did everything by his own during the night. So it was really fantastic. And this was the only way we could did with one unit cell, which was quite small, it was not big, so big amount, so large amount of these coasters. And what we learned from this story was how to combine automation and the cementitious materials. Because all these machines which are used in regular automation practice are very sensitive. Let's say a dosing unit is very sensitive to viscosity of a media, whatever you're doing. And yeah, and we learned so how to control viscosity of cementitious materials for pretty large open time interval.
And that was important for the coasters?
That was important for the coasters.
It's so important in concrete printing because of the hose, but
that's
in,
right.
Is there a hose in coasters?
No, it was not the hose because the dosing unit, so we cannot buy that. We could not buy the dosing unit. We should done it, we should did it by ourselves. So we designed, sure, with engineers which are capable of doing that, we designed some rotational mixer which has a squeeze valves, like some printers are using also these squeeze valves, just to on off, to open and close the flow of concrete. And with precise opening and closing these valves, we can regulate the speed of dosing and the amount of material which can dose, and precisely, really precisely. I mean, let's say 100 grams plus minus 1 gram, and this was done in 1 second. So, I mean, what I would like to say is that we learned that it's quite difficult to combine concrete material, which is not that precise, and then on the other hand, the automation technologies or the technologies, whatever technologies. And yeah, this helped us a lot when we run into the when we go into the 3D printing.
So let's get into some of the nitty-gritty stuff. The lack of precision in concrete, please correct me if I'm wrong, comes from the variability in the ingredients when you order them. You could order the same thing from two different plants and receive a very different product. And also when you're printing concrete on site, all of the weather parameters as well, along with the human error in between. Did you store the material properly? How long was it stored? Did it get contaminated? Was it moisture protected?
Correctly.
The beauty of a materials expert like yourself is you can identify these problems and figure out which of those things it might have come from to fix it. Otherwise, it's just like, okay, this is not good concrete. There's more to it than good concrete and bad concrete.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, yes and no. We are not magicians. So all these who work with the construction chemistry, we can recognize problems with concrete as you could. But maybe we have a lot, some tools, like some chemicals, to manipulate with this concrete. But a lot of times happens that when concrete is already mixed, I mean, what you can do? Not much. So you can just go back and say, listen, next batch should be different. Put less water or more water, or put admixture or less admixture, and so on.
Temperature.
Sure, sure. And what is really correct, what you said, is that the all these parameters you had mentioned. I'm sorry. I will just switch off this thing. Influence concrete a lot. A temperature is one very important thing, because temperature in connection with concrete increases reaction rate. So, and this is called Arrhenius law. So Arrhenius law tells us that every chemical reaction will exponentially increase with increasing temperature. And yeah, and this is true also for concrete. So and now in a concrete we have I mean several or tens of parallel and consecutive reactions, which can be different in the different way influenced by temperature. So yeah, it's crazy. It cannot be predicted. Although the end is quite simple, you see and observe the concrete and say, okay, yes, it's good or it's not good. But behind that is really complicated stuff, which is not explored and which is very hard to, for exploring in detail. It's not like with some polymeric stuff. A lot of things are known. There is one component react with second component or react with the moisture or whatever. And it's quite predictable. So you have models, and with these models you can predict everything. With concrete, it's not like that. And what you have mentioned, what influences a lot is the storage conditions and the freshness of the materials. So especially important with the Portland cement, which tends to react with humidity in air quite strongly. Interesting, some cements react with humidity in air quite severe, and other cements don't. Let's say, for instance, a Portland cement is very sensitive to humidity and to storage and to humid places. On the other hand, we have aluminate cement, which itself is much more reactive than the Portland cement, but it's not sensitive to humidity.
Portland is sulfate?
Excuse me?
There's the CA, there's the carbon aluminate or calcium aluminate? Yeah, it's calcium aluminate.
Where? And
calcium sulfate?
Yeah. I mean, we have silicate and also some of aluminate phases in Portland cement. And also some of the gypsum, which regulates the setting. So this is the calcium sulfate.
Yeah, okay.
So this is important cement. We don't have calcium sulfate in alumina cement. This is a calcium aluminates, which are
only
purely...
Portland has the sulfate?
The gypsum, yes. Yes, only
gypsum
Portland
has sulfate.
Yeah. I mean, you could have a gypsum... So at the end you have the anhydride, but what's important, you have the calcium sulfate as one of the phases in your Portland cement. So,
and then another thing you mentioned, sorry, go ahead.
So there is around 5% of calcium sulfate, around 3 to 5% in every Portland cement with respect to clinker.
And then you also mentioned the silicate, which is different from the sulfate.
Yeah. So sulfate is made of sulfur. It's the SO4. So this is a sulfur ion, sulfate ion. So calcium sulfate is CaSO4. And then we have the silicates, and these are the minerals coming from silicon, element silicon. And yeah, I mean, this is a totally other area of chemistry, but yeah, in Portland cement we have silicate phases, C3S and C2S. We have probably around 50, 60, 70%. I mean, depends on the composition of this
and
silicates.
How would that differ for other types of cement?
Well, some cements has more silicates, or we can have a completely silicate cement like bellite cements, but some cements have zero silicate phases, and these cements are, let's say, for instance, calcium aluminate cements, or also the calcium sulfur aluminate cements, which have some potential and which have some sales in market.
Interesting. Maybe we could go through an exercise comparing how you would prepare material for a small planter object that might be 2 feet tall and a foot diameter versus a big 1,000 square foot or 100 square meter house.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you mean with printing?
Yeah, you can't use necessarily the same material typically, right?
Yeah, I mean, sure you can. So, I mean,
yeah,
you can, but there are limitations with regards to technology, not material. So, I would say it's much easier to make very big houses than a small planter with 3D printing. So, let's say, for instance, we have big gantry systems, big gantry printers, and let's say one layer is what? Maybe, I don't know, maybe it's 50 meters long or maybe even more. And the printer needs, I don't know, 10 minutes to go around. And so what you can see that the build up rate is very small. So when next layer is coming, it passes 10 minutes and then the next 10 minutes and the next 10 minutes. So you have only six layers in 1 hour. So in 1 hour, actually even normal concrete starts to set a little bit. But when you have a planter, a small planter, and you would like to print with that same printer, so a next layer will come just 2 seconds after the lower one. So you will have six layers, not in 1 hour, but in 1 minute. And this changes the story a lot. So we should think of is what is the build up rate. And this is a crucial point based, this is everything what you should know. It's not the planter, it's not the house, it's just the build up rate. So how fast you will go on to a next layer. And this is it. So, and if you would like to print that fast, you should have to modify your formulation. So it could not be the same, or you should print it very slowly. So let's say like 1 centimeter per minute or per second or whatever. But then you realize that you don't have such a good pump that could run so slowly in such small amount, let's say with the same big aggregates, like let's say 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 millimeters. So doesn't matter. So yeah, so this is now an issue. So you should formulate your mix, and you should sure put some accelerants, or I mean, not necessary that there are accelerators. There could be other powder materials. It could be like something which thickens the consistency of a mix much quicker or much more severe. And yeah, it's known that the microsilica could thickens the consistency of concrete.
Now we've entered, you mentioned phase change, we've entered the duality of 3D printed concrete needing to flow through the hose and then also support all of the subsequent layers without any real reinforcement or supports, no formwork or anything. Sometimes sand or gravel helps or underwater, but typically they're just printing in the open air after flowing through the hose. So how do they achieve that ability, especially 6, 7, 8 millimeter aggregate, like you were mentioning, getting it to flow through the hose and then deposit? Does the aggregate size help?
Yes, the aggregate size help, but it also, I mean, it's very important, the distribution curve of aggregate. So, I mean, depends what concrete you would like to have. You could have a concrete which is really a good pump, which has a good pumpability, or you could have a concrete which does not have a good pumpability, but it has a good buildability. And these are two different parameters. So pumpable concrete is a flowable concrete, and non-pumpable concrete is a buildable concrete. So if you have a concrete which is not good in pumping, then the wear of your parts, of your hoses and stator rotor, if you're doing with the stator rotor pump, will be severe. So you should have to change these components very often.
That's when you have to bring a sledgehammer to break the concrete out of the hose.
yeah. Let's say, for instance. But yeah, what we should know is that today these pumping these concretes are quite strong. So they can pump material which is printable. No need to be, let's say, very flowable material. It could be. I mean, the consistency or the slump could be just, I don't know, 50 millimeters. So that means quite stiff concrete in terms of workability. And you could pump it with the rotor stator system.
Huh? Can compensate. Pump strength can compensate for viscosity.
Yeah, can. But what is normally done is that you should you should calculate what's the what's your hydration profile. So for the hydration profile, you should know at what time, where is the concrete at certain point in time. So at time zero, okay, at time zero is in a mixer. Then in time, 3 minutes, where is concrete in time of 3 minutes? Okay, it's in a pump. In a time 5 minutes, where is concrete? Okay, it's in a hose. In a time 7 minutes, it's on the nozzle. So if you know that, then you can manipulate this chemistry of concrete and say, okay, I would like that my concrete is workable from 0 to 7 minutes, and then from 7 to 8 minutes, it should stiffen. And all this could be done with knowing the chemistry, with knowing the admixtures. So what we did is design formulation which can stiff at certain point in when you would like to. Let's say after 3 minutes, it should stiffen, not hardens, because this, I mean, also this is possible, but it's risky, because if it is still flowable when it's coming from the nozzle, no need, you could not print. If it sets in the hose, then you have a blockage. So you should be on the safe side, and you can manipulate these characteristics, this rheology of a concrete with admixtures.
It's interesting, your level of experience with materials, you kind of understand every variable, and there's so many different variables. I imagine the system that you have set up is maybe more complex than somebody without the same level of materials experience would maybe prefer. Is that accurate?
So you mean a system of like a mix design?
Like the ideal printing system for you, since you understand the complexity, is the average user might need something more simple?
Sure. I mean, average user should have something where you press the button and it works. And when you stop the button, it stops. This is for sure.
One day.
Yeah.
Nobody's doing that.
Yeah. I mean, it helps that you have experience with concrete. So what I have recognized is that a lot of people doing the 3D printing of concrete has nothing to do with concrete. There are some startups which just are keen of technology and starts with everything. But it's really important that the guys who do the printing have a person which knows what's concrete.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
Yeah, this is very important. It doesn't need to be on the really high level with a university degree. No, this person should have experiences with concrete, with cleaning concrete, with
but
adding
water.
There's
not so many of those people out there. Like I've talked to a lot of people in the 3D concrete printing world, and there's like, I mean, I can't count more than 10 people that I've met with your level of kind of like materials understanding. There's really not that many out there.
So on that level, where I am, there are some people which work in big construction.
There's 300 concrete printers, so there's not enough of you to go around.
Yeah, it's I don't know how to answer that. Yes, there are not many people who knows a background of chemistry with in combination with the technology and with the on-site experiences. But there are other people which might help a lot, and these are the people which come from practice. So let's say it would be very good that this company is doing the printing would have someone which has experiences in mixers, in pumping systems. Anybody who is knowledgeable about the pumping of concrete, let's say for instance that is familiar with these continuous mixers and pumpers like dual, mm-hmm. I mean these pumps which has a dual principle of mixing and pumping, this guy could be extremely helpful, because this guy knows everything. Does no need to know a lot about chemistry. He knows which concrete will go through the pump and which concrete will not go through a pump. And he can regulate the water. He can add some, maybe some more cement, or maybe prepare alternative mix and so on
I'm
based on
sure.
his experiences. So yeah.
The most successful teams have a water cooler and heaters that they can control whatever temperature the water comes out.
Yeah, it helps a lot, but still the printer itself and the pump itself warms up during the operation. And it's important because at the end of the day, I mean, you start with 5 degrees Celsius and you stop with 25 degrees Celsius. I mean, just the temperature of the machine. So
And that's just inside. Outside, it might be 5 to 30.
5 to 30 or 30 to 5 or whatever possible conditions. So that's why the one component systems and one component printers are really sensitive, and you should really know what you're doing. You should regulate everything between speed of pumping and speed of printing. So I mean, you should know what are a minimum and the maximum at your pumping speed and what is the minimum maximum at your printing speed. So, and you can play around. So it probably it's not a good idea that you have all the time everything constant, a constant flow of concrete and constant printing, and just go ahead. Yeah, it could work, but it could work very slowly. So that's why these printers are going very slowly, 10 centimeters per second or something like that. It's very slow. But now some guys are thinking about two component systems. There are two component systems. I mean, much smaller printers. I mean, doing the pots, doing some small concrete architectural stuff. Like
I've seen big gantry printers doing 2K systems for years, like 20 in Canada.
Oh. I wasn't aware about that, and that's great. And I think that the two component system is something which promises a lot in building houses, but it's not any two component system because this chemistry is very dangerous. It's not so straight ahead. Oh, we have a concrete, so concrete is quite durable. It could happen that this concrete, because you're using wrong component, could not be as durable as you think it is, and this will come to scene only in 5 years or in 10 years. And what will happen? You have 100 houses, and then you have some severe cracking of concrete and loss of structural integrity and so on. This could be dangerous, and this is especially true if you are using aluminates as a second component, and This is now happening at this small printer. I'm not aware what this 20, you said 20?
20 additive manufacturing.
Yeah. What is their second component? But all other guys which are doing the 2K printing, the second component is alkali free accelerator, which is based on the aluminum sulfate.
Maybe if I describe it to you, you would know. It's a big blue barrel with a small pipe going into the Bauminator printhead.
Bauminator?
Yeah.
So are you now speaking of Bauminator or 20?
20. Baumit makes just a printhead.
Yeah.
And they sell not the printer, but just the printhead from Baumit. I think the printhead is also called the Bauminator, or maybe that's the whole printer's Bauminator. Okay.
Yeah.
Just uses the extruder head from them.
Yeah, this is it. So it's most likely aluminate sulfate is the second component. I mean, we cannot rely on color of a barrel, but which chemical is that? But I assume it's aluminum sulfate based alkali free accelerator, because this is a technology which is well known in spraying of concrete, in shotcrete, and this technology is coming from construction of tunneling. So in tunneling, you have spraying of concrete, you have shotcreting. So one component is concrete and a second component is alkali free accelerator. And this chemistry is known. But what is not known is the durability aspect of this concrete. Because this concrete is just a first cover in a tunnel. A tunnel has a very stable environment, stable temperature, And then it comes a second layer, which is exposed to environment, and this matters, not the first layer, which is shotcrete. And there are some papers indicating that we might face a big problem with this two-component system. That means with this aluminum sulfate based accelerators in concrete.
Some people think that you can do all this testing in a lab and then determine how many years the concrete will last. That seems very hard for me to believe without actually seeing the years go by. But what do you think?
Yeah, so if you use a certified systems, so a certified cement, a certified sand, a certified machine, testing the compressive strength, testing the water ingress, or whatever they are, you can predict very good. So what will be the durability of concrete? But this is based on years of experiences, of 100 years of experiences of this industry. And now we are coming with a completely new technology, with a completely new materials. It could be new or could not be new. But what is new is for sure that this concrete is not even called concrete. Let's say for some engineers, for some civil engineers, a concrete is only a material which is certified. And we don't have certified materials because this is not concrete. Normally the printers are using, let's say, a 2 millimeter or maybe 4 millimeter aggregate size. And according to European standard, this is not a concrete. For a concrete, you should have at least 8 millimeter aggregate size. But why is this important? This is important because the lower the dimension of a sand, the larger is portion of powder materials, and that means cement or pretty much cement in a formulation. That means that, let's say, for a concrete which has a maximum aggregate size of, let's say, 32 millimeters, which is quite average in Europe, a cement dose in a cubic meter is around 250 kilograms. But if we have a material, or let's say concrete, let's say that this is concrete, which has a maximum of aggregate size of 2 millimeters, so not 32, but only 2, then a dose of a cement should be around 1,000 per cubic meter. So much more. And that, so more cement means more problem. And this is now an issue with this 3D printing material. Not only this, so a usual concrete, let's say a concrete wall, is 15 centimeters, at least 15 centimeters thick. So our layer of printing material is maybe 5 centimeter thick. So that means that the transport phenomena of water evaporating to outside are much more severe than with the normal concrete, which additionally has molds on each side. So
that's the advantage of the larger aggregate.
Advantage of a larger aggregate is reducing cement quantity. So this is especially important with shrinkage of concrete. So the more is the cement dose, the bigger is the shrinkage. So the more severe is shrinkage. So the bigger is the water percentage in a material, the more severe is the drying shrinkage. So we have problems. We have problems with a lot of cement and with a lot of water.
And it's weaker typically with more water.
So more water, more weak concrete. Yeah. But what's also important that a lot of companies now use, let's say, 3D printing materials with water to cement ratio of, let's say, 0.35. So quite low. That means quite good and quite strong concrete. But this small water to cement ratio is so small that if you have some evaporation of water, because so I will explain why you have evaporation of water. When you have this evaporation of water, you immediately destroy your structure and you have cracks, cracks which you can observe it initially, or in 1 day, in 2 days, and especially in 28 days and 80 days, and so on and so on. So it's really dangerous. And now, as I told you, that I will explain you why we have severe evaporation. So if you want to have concrete which is buildable, so which is extrudable, which is printable, and so on, this concrete must somehow react with water quite fast. So not like traditional concrete we placed in a mold, we wait for 6 hours, 7 hours, and then the chemistry slowly start working and the heat is generated and so on. So these processes in 3D printing are much faster, and normally we want that aluminate phases in a concrete react faster, because these are the only components in our cement which could work in Portland cement. They're originally there, which could react faster than in 6 hours. They can react in 1 hour or in 2 hours. Or
how long does the sulfate take to react?
What? Say again, please.
How long does the sulfate take to react?
Sulfate is here to regulate the setting time. So to regulate the setting time, and it's due to the aluminate phases reaction. So we want these reactions take place not immediately, but in 6 hours, in seven mm-hmm. hours, because this is safe, and that's why these sulfates are in the mix, in the Portland mix, and they react with aluminium compounds in a cement. But what's the problem? If we have an early hydration reaction with aluminates and also maybe with the silicates, a tremendous heat is generated. So that means initially you have a concrete which has, let's say, 20 degrees Celsius. But after 1 hour of working, your concrete could have 25.
Exponentially more evaporation.
And that means more evaporation, because normally an outside temperature is cooler. So the evaporation is really severe. So if you don't cover this structure, if you don't spray with water, you have problems in cracking. And
so from a chemical standpoint, is there a difference between evaporation and then after the concrete sets for the rest of its lifetime, it's still releasing some small amount? Is that still evaporation?
Yeah. It is. Okay. But I mean, you have structure. Now imagine you have cheese, so a slice of cheese. If you mm-hmm. put a slice of cheese on a table and the cheese dries, it could dry quite fast. It will change the shape and it would bend and so on. But if you have a hard cheese, which sure has much less water inside, then it will just slowly evaporate, and this cheese will not change the structure so fast, maybe slowly by the time. So you can see with the concrete is the same. So if you have hard concrete and still water in a concrete, this evaporation will be slow, and at one point you will have some equilibrium. There will be some water going out and some water going in, and this is on a micro scale. You have shrinkage and contra and swelling and temperature, changing the dimensions due to the temperature. So this concrete is, let's say, like shaking, if you would say that, I mean, in this perspective. So sure, it's much better than evaporation is slower, happens slower than faster.
Yeah, it's really interesting too, because the water, it's not so simple. It only makes the concrete weaker if it's thoroughly mixed in. After it's printed, you can have as much water outside of the mix that not mixed into the layer. I guess it doesn't permeate or thoroughly mix in well enough to make the concrete weaker.
No.
How does that work?
So you're asking me if it is possible to print in a water bath.
I guess more water makes it weaker, more water makes it stronger. Both of those statements are true. Please explain.
It's quite hard, but okay. Cement is what we already said is a hydraulic binder. That means we need water to react with these cementitious materials. So, and there is around 25 to 30% per a cement, per let's say a type one or maybe a type two. So cement, so I'm speaking about the EN standard, so I'm not used to American standards. So I mean, let's say pure clinker or a cement with a lot of clinker, you need around 25 to 30% water. So this is water to cement ratio. So 0.3 is something you need for chemical reaction. So if you would put cement and water, mix it, tight it in a plastic bag, no evaporation, then this is a perfect material. It's very strong, it's super strong and cool, and everything is okay. But this mixing only 30% of water with the cement, this is very stiff material. It's something that you cannot with not mix it easily with a spoon. So, and for that reason, you need a super plasticizer to reduce water. But this super plasticizers make this mix flowable. So, like liquid. I mean, with respect to the 3D printing, this is something which is not good. Sure.
Unless you have a phase change.
Okay.
I think you explained the water thing. That's good.
Because this you need more water to mix concrete, because you have also other powders, and we have also aggregates, and we need more water that our material is mixable and workable. And normally this water to cement ratio is around 0.4, 0.45, 0.5. I mean, depends on your mix design, on aggregate size, and so on. And so we have some water which is needed for chemical reaction, and some water which is needed just for to make a concrete mixable.
And
And
reduce, okay, yeah. And then after that, you want water to reduce the evaporation effect.
yeah, so now we have water and cement. So if we tied this in a plastic bag and wait for 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, everything what is needed reacts, and there is still 10% of extra water in a system, you open that, and this 10% of extra water slowly evaporates and leave the microporosity in your bag of concrete. And what we already told, the later this happens, the better for the shrinkage. And the sooner this happen, there are some damages and some cracking and some bending of concrete and whatever is happening, just due to non-proper curing of concrete in initial early stages.
One other thing I wanted. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
I mean, this is a simple explanation why water on one hand is good and water on the other hand is not good, and so on. So, water, I mean, in order to place concrete, let's say in a mold, your concrete should have a good workability. Otherwise, it would be hard to place, hard to compact. You would have no chance to make a compactor, a vibrator, and compact this concrete. So it means that more water means better concrete and better concrete characteristics. Sure, to one extent. If you go beyond that, it's just worse. But I mean, just to know that having a concrete with water to cement ratio 0.35, so a little bit more than a chemical need, is not bad. It's better than having just a 0.3, because at that rate you would have a stiff and sticky concrete, and it would not be good for filling the molds and whatever.
Okay, so another thing I wanted to ask about is a study in 2017 by Barak Khoshnevitz of Contour Crafting said that the larger aggregate size, because of the distance it has to flow through the hose, has separation. And there's a lubrication layer on the exterior of the hose where it's a lot of liquid and smaller particles, and all the larger particles end up in the center, which can create a plug flow zone or lead to clogging events. And having a l less consistent, you want your material to be homogeneous, not separated. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, this has something to do with the concrete rheology. So the concrete rheology is subject which covers how concrete is influenced when you imply some force to a concrete. So if you do the shearing, if you pump the concrete, and so on. And a concrete which is not properly designed tends to segregate, tends to bleed. It could tend to segregate without any special force, just because of gravity. The big stones are falling down, and the water is going up. But I mean, when you study the rheology, you should have the whole range of this we are calling the shear rates. So how severe is mixing of concrete? I mean, when it flows. So, for instance, we can think about pumping. So it's going. Let's say if you have a piston pump, you have a strong press, and it flows the concrete to a hose, and then the hose is flowing through a hose. The concrete is going through a hose, and if the concrete is not properly designed and it has some tendency to segregation, even if you don't observe it when it's at rest and you're saying, oh, it's good concrete, it might segregate when you pump. And this is what probably this study is talking about. So, but it's not necessary that your concrete, which is used for 3D printing or for whatever application, is segregated. But on the other hand, you always have a wall effect on concrete. That means you could not have a big aggregate on a wall, so you always have a water or a layer of cement and water. So when you have a mold and you place the concrete in a mold, you see a super flat surface. It's water and cement, no big aggregates, because the aggregates are behind that. So, but according to my experiences in practice, I would say that pumping concrete through a hose, if the concrete has a good consistency or good rheological properties, it's never segregating. So you
I
don't
have one
see this
more.
phase separation. You don't see this phase separation. So I don't know about this particular study. I should take a look what these guys are talking about, what are they studying, and yeah, but
Yeah,
so
I'll
I
have to find
cannot
it and send
comment.
it to you.
Yeah, okay.
The one last question I wanted to ask. So I know the all the stuff we talked about, like the 2K material, reducing phase separation, these are very complex things that people should contact you and maybe get some consulting help or bring you on the team somehow or whatever. We could talk more about the organization of and what kind of clients you're looking for after. But the I'd like to ask you, let's say there's a group of high school students that are doing a science project and they built a 3 foot or 1 meter by 1 meter by 1 meter little printer, and they want to go to the hardware store and just start printing concrete, something quick, simple. They don't have the understanding of materials like you do, so they can't deal with 2K. They don't have the complexity understanding. Could it be something as simple as 45% cement,
Sure.
the rest
Sure.
sand, and then
Yeah.
35% cement to water ratio?
Yeah, sure. I mean, everything is very simple. It's not that complicated. It starts to be complicated only when you go deep into the material. So otherwise, it's just a very simple material. So for starting printing or for starting doing concrete, you just should know that you need cement, you need Portland cement. You can buy it in a hardware store. You need sand and you need water. So for the start, this is good enough. Now sand, this is maybe a little bit tricky. Sand, you can buy normally a sand which has a different sizes, different aggregate sizes. So it could be really fine, normally from 0.1 to 0.5 millimeters, so really fine. And then coarser, from 0.5 to 2, and then maybe from 2 to 3. And then the dry sand in bags, it's quite difficult to get. So what's important, that it should be dry if you're using a dry mixer, a mixing and pumping in one unit. If it is not, it's just mixer, separate mixer and separate pump, then you can use a wet aggregate. So you can go on a concrete plant and ask, can you give me a fraction of sand? And they normally have it from 0 to 2 millimeters. So this is, I'm talking for Europe, or maybe 0 to 4 millimeters. So you should be careful about the maximum aggregate size, what your pump is capable of pumping. So normally for these small machines, they can handle 1 to 2 millimeter maximum aggregate size. So, okay, go to a store, buy cement, buy this sand, let's say 0.1 to 1 millimeter, and just mix it. So I would guess that a proportion of such sand up to 1 millimeter and the cement could be, let's say, 40 to 60, 40% cement and 60% of aggregate. And then the water. With water, you will regulate everything. So if you put water, a lot of water, let's say like 50% to cement, then you have a too flowable concrete. And just reduce water. Go from 0.5 to 0.45, maybe to 0.4. Try to mix it. If you are able to mix it, okay, then put it in a pump and see if the pump is capable of pumping this quite sticky material. And if the material is non-workable, then it is most likely that it will be buildable. And then it's just the question how many layers you would print before collapsing, because before buckling of your structure. And okay, then you say, okay, now I can print 5 layers, or I can print 1 layer per 5 minutes. So I know how big the structure should be. And I will have, I don't know, 50 layers, but I can print only 10 layers per hour. And then you just calculate and say, okay, I will print 1 hour, and then I will stop for half an hour, and then I'll make another batch, and I will restart, and so on. It's very simple. It's not that difficult. The thing starts to be complicated when you try to do something really fast, or with some negative angles, or things like that.
Very cool. Yeah, I think that was a pretty thorough explanation. And so what's the ideal client look like? Who's the person who would benefit the most from your services?
I guess the companies which are all already printing now, but had some issues with materials or with printing as a whole. Maybe some companies which would like to have their own material, because maybe now a company from one state is buying material from another state in big bags,
in another country,
and just the transport cost maybe $100 per ton, or such things, and maybe the price of concrete is quite high, so. To reduce these things, so that the cost of concrete, or to improve the printing parameters, they can consult me. They can call me, and I can make some tests for them. So in my lab, in my printer, maybe they can send me some cement, some gravel, a local gravel, and I'm just doing a simple test and saying, listen, it would be nice if you would like want to have, let's say, if you would like to print with I don't know, 20 centimeters per second, 30 centimeters per second, that you should put some extra component, and this component you can get, I don't know, here and there, and buy from that company. And yeah, and then, but the tricky thing is that you should find a dry mix company which mix all these components in one unit, in one material, in bags. But I think that these large companies could have their own dry mix facility, so that they would have their own silo for cement, own silo for sand, and just simply mixing these two and having it stored in big bags. And this would be the most efficient way and efficient reduction of price per cubic meter of printing concrete.
Yeah, we've entered a really interesting territory. I have another appointment, and so I can't ask the question about batch plant mixers. I would love to. I could go into it a whole nother hour about batch plant mixers. We'll have to do another episode. And I think batch plant mixers have some improvements to make in the meantime before they're useful enough for that episode, perhaps as well.
Yeah, but they should. I mean, because this is probably the only future. Not now, not in 1 year, not in 2 years. But if we all want that the 3D printers will come reality, and that the houses will be indeed printed commercially, then we should use existing technology.
Yeah, and so what's the best way for people to follow you, keep up with your work?
I don't know. I'm active on LinkedIn. So I post some nice posts what are we doing our lab, so people can see that we are not doing simple thing, we are progressing. I publish only what is very interesting, or I mean our improvement in materials, in technologies, and so on. And
Yeah, I
yeah.
think your posts are fantastic. On LinkedIn, you post some of the most scientific analysis of materials and printed concrete that I've seen. You provide all kinds of statistics and data. It's really fascinating
Yeah, thank you.
to see. You can tell you're an expert just from your LinkedIn posts. But I'll also leave the link to your website in the description. So if they want to reach out and hire you, they can check out your website. They can go to the contact page there,
Yeah.
shoot an email to you.
Yeah. Very
Yeah,
good.
cool.
Cool. Thank you very much, Jared, for having me. It was really nice to talk with someone who knows a lot about 3D printing. So,
Thank
yeah.
you. It was illuminating, and I think the audience will really appreciate the your expertise in materials. And maybe there's, I think there's at least one group of students out there who's going to Home Depot after listening to this episode.
Okay.
All right. Thanks
Yeah.
again. You're the man.
Okay, thank you.